Thank you. The meeting of the Transportation Finance Committee will come to order. Welcome, members. I'm not sure. It doesn't look like we have a quorum yet today. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, you are now going to be providing an informational hearing for us today. And would you like to give us an overview?
Thank you,
of
members.
What we'll be doing?
Appreciate that, Madam Chair. This bill, hasn't been formally jacketed, but again, I want the committee to hear this. Or has it been, Mr. Chair? I don't. U of M. So both of this is not. But again, I wanted to have the committee have a look at this. There's no formal motion, but, you know, based on kind of the feedback we get today, may or may not include it in our bill. Certainly something I'd like to do because we have a long history with the University of Minnesota and have done this kind of thing before. I feel strongly, members, that we have great resources here in the room. We always we have Metropolitan Council. We have great staff members, nonpartisan and partisan, who help us out with information. We have wonderful resources at MnDOT. We have great interest groups in transportation that provide us with information. But there's really something unique that the University of Minnesota brings, and that is, incredible, talented experts with a strong background in public policy who work for our state's largest public education institution of higher learning. And I think in addition to the interest groups that might give us information from a particular perspective, even our public agencies have a particular perspective, and sometimes that changes depending on who the governor is, and as well as, local governments. But there's something that's always there and always steady, and that's the University of Minnesota. So we rely on them, I think, for objective information, data-driven information. And so I feel strongly that it's our responsibility as a transportation committee to take a look at giving them an appropriation for their work. And so we've done this before, again, members. We have both the Humphrey Institute and the Center for Transportation Studies that are institutions at the University of Minnesota that this committee has worked with and supported in the past. So I wanted to bring them in for a very short presentation, and then we can have some questions and answers. President Beard, is that okay with you? Okay. All right. I don't know. I think we have Mr. Munich first.
Okay.
And I've asked them to be brief. We have another informational hearing, and then we can adjourn, hopefully ahead of schedule, because I know people are quite busy.
If you can state your name for the record.
I'm Lori McGinnis. I'm director at the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. It's really a pleasure to be here today, and I see some familiar faces from those who may have attended our policymaker seminar that we did back in late January. So it's great to be here again today. As you may recall, the Center for Transportation Studies is really the focal point at the university for all transportation-related research, education, and outreach. And under that umbrella-type structure, we work with over 150 researchers in 30 different departments. So we really tap into the strength of the university and these neutral perspectives that the chair mentioned. One of our strongest and longest term relationships has been with the Humphrey School, in particular the state and local policy program. And in just a minute, I'm going to hand it off to Lee Munich, director of that state and local policy program, to talk about the research we think could bring value to the state. There's been a lot of attention recently on really making sure that Minnesota is as economically competitive as possible. And we believe that transportation makes a strong contribution to that economic competitiveness. Yet we believe there's really a lot of work yet to be done to make sure that we know as much as possible about that link, and so we can make sure that any investments in transportation are doing the most they can to contribute to that economic competitiveness. So, Mr. Munich is here to talk about some possible research in that area.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
members of the committee. My name is Lee Munich, and I'm a senior fellow at the Humphrey School, and I'm director of the state and local policy program at the school. I have a PowerPoint presentation, but I'll try to move through it very quickly so I can be brief and you can move on to your other business. I've been with the Humphrey School since 1991, and we have two areas of the state and local policy program is focused in two areas of research. One is transportation policy, and the other is economic development and economic competitiveness. And this proposed research effort really brings those two together. The work we've done in transportation policy includes having worked on the early phase of congestion pricing, value pricing, which led to the MinPass lane. I think many of the members of MidLanes and many of the members have been involved in that. In the economic competitiveness area, we've been involved in doing studies of clusters in Minnesota and are currently participating with Harvard Business School on a cluster mapping project for industry clusters in around the U.S. So the focus of this particular effort would be transportation policy and economic development, how innovations in transportation can contribute to economic competitiveness as seen through the prisms of financing industry clusters and transportation technology. So it's going to be taking an economic competitiveness frame that is not always the way in which we think about transportation. It's certainly a major reason why transportation investments occur, but just how does it affect economic competitiveness in that way? And I can't get the slides to move.
So technology.
So I may only have one slide here, which maybe will shorten my presentation.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
That's why we have young people for pages.
Yes,
make those
exactly.
Work.
There we go. Sorry. So there are three areas of focus to this economic competitiveness. One is innovation and transportation finance, options and economic development, transportation impacts of industry clusters and freight, and transportation technology impacts on economic competitiveness. So a competitive transportation system, first of all, must have adequate sustainable revenue streams to cover capital and maintenance costs, and that's what the business of this committee is about. Topics that we would like to pursue further with regard to that are related to value pricing, MinPass corridor studies, mileage-based user fees that some of you have been involved in here. And while that may be a difficult issue for many right now, I think in the future it's probably going to be something that we see, at least in some form. Public-private partnerships and value capture. So part of this would be to sort of mine those areas further in terms of how those issues relate to economic competitiveness and financing the system. This chart, I think some of you saw during the training that we offered earlier. My colleague Jerry Shaw has been very involved in this, as well as the DLRE. And what we would like to do is this idea of public-private partnerships somewhere below full privatization and our traditional delivery systems. There are some opportunities here that relate to economic competitiveness. The second area is transportation impacts of industry clusters and freight. Dynamic, and one of the things we've learned in studying industries in Minnesota, and this has been independent of looking at transportation, is that we have one of the most diverse, vibrant economies in the U.S. The other thing about it, though, is it's extremely complex. The transportation issues that relate to this economy are very different for each of these clusters. And recently we've been doing more research and looking at freight transportation manufacturers, finding out what are the role of these clusters in terms of regional competitiveness. And MnDOT's been interested in learning more about this, so I think this is sort of a perfect time for to do this kind of work and inform the work of people who are involved in transportation policies. Policy in this room, as well as transportation planners and policymakers. Some of the topics there are industry clusters in Minnesota regions and the role of freight transportation, the role of congestion and transit infrastructure and regional cluster competitiveness, the role of industry value chains in transportation policy planning for economic development, and then applying an industry cluster approach in transportation planning for economic development. And as I mentioned, we're involved in a national project as a regional partner looking at how to use clusters as a way of understanding the way the economy works. This is just a little chart that shows sort of the competitive clusters in the Minneapolis-St. Paul region that we used in a project with the Regional Council of Mayors and also with Greater MSP, which is trying to brand and market the this region. And this just shows some of the, it shows the concentration and the patterns of change in terms of industry. So medical devices is up in the corner, you can see very important. Management of companies, which another word for that would be corporate headquarters, obviously key, very key, not just for the business themselves, but driving several others, such as analytical instruments, electrical. So one of the things that we have been doing is trying to understand these clusters deeper, and what we will propose to do here would be to look at specifically what are the transportation issues and how does that relate to economic competitiveness. We've been doing studies around the state. This is sort of the Alexandria West Central area and manufacturing automation technology in that region is an important economic driver, and there are a number of businesses related to that. Another project that we did was related to food processing, meat and dairy in central Minnesota, and recently we've been doing interviews with manufacturers in District 8 with the district engineer to try to understand what are some of the manufacturing issues related to transportation. And then the final area is transportation technology impacts on economic competitiveness, looking at information technology and the way in which it's changing transportation systems and the way in which they're managed. And these include technologies that improve economic competitiveness through productivity improvements, as well as bringing safety, environmental, and social benefits. So some of the topics that we would be looking at here would be ITS technologies and related policy research. Now, there's a lot of good research going on in the university on ITS technologies, but not all those technologies are ready to go. And so how do we deal with the policy issues of when and where to use them, and how does that tie in with economic competitiveness? Some of the topics would include robotics, new energy technologies, safety technologies, innovative information systems, and congestion management systems. Advances in intermodal technologies and applications, and then finally self-driving car advancements and policy issues. We just heard a presentation on towards zero deaths, and Volvo has a Vision Zero, and they showed the cars that they're making, and eventually if we're going to deal with the safety problem, we have to deal with the drivers, and this may be part of the solution. But, you know, we're a long ways from the driverless car, but there are efforts going on. How does that relate, and how do we deal with the policy issues related to that? So I put together, this is sort of an overview budget. They're really, the three components are listed here, the finance part, the cluster efforts, and then the transportation technology, and we see it being divided among those three. But then we do, it would include a research, education, and outreach components on each one of these. So we're looking at doing research, sort of tapping into innovations that are occurring, but also including this with education and outreach as part of our initiative. That's it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do you have comments? And I would like to see, because we have a question on deck, if you
members
would
just,
like
you
to
know,
move to that.
No, I look forward to hearing from the committee, but, you know, I was reminded that mileage-based user fee, you know, and it's quite controversial, and, you know, we're not doing anything with that issue in this year in this committee. But Representative Beard and I sat on a task force, and a lot of the technical assistance for that was provided by the university. We met at the Humphrey Institute. They provided us with materials, and it was just, that's just an example of how we interface with this committee or with this institution. And so I like the synergy that's existed over the years bipartisanly. And you know, I just, these are good folks, and you know, obviously I said to Mr. Munich, come prepared with a budget, and I think they're serious, and I think they want to work with us, but I'm interested to hear about, and these are all things that are pretty cutting edge, and we have to sort of, you know, driverless car, that's not in front of us right now. How we replace the gas tax is not in front of us right now, but I think we have to have an institution of higher learning prepare us to start to deal with these challenges that may seem far into the future, but it's our responsibility to deal with. So that's all I wanted to say, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer questions, Mr. Munich.
Thank you. Representative
from the U as well.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'm sorry I came a little late, but I was just looking at your budget up there, and you brought in driverless cars. Did you have a dollar figure in that budget for that conversation? Because I asked the Department of Transportation to just have a conversation with me about it, and they came up with a fiscal note of a little, just I think $200,000 to have a conversation about it, which I thought was amazingly expensive. So if you want to cut out the transportation department,
well,
Mr. Munich, I'll have the conversation with you for free, and you and I can put together a bill to come forward next year. Just giving you a heads up that I'd love to be included in that conversation.
Madam Chair, we're involved in public policy and planning, and that's what we do at the Humphrey School. So, if you're going to talk about driverless cars, and you want to invest in studying the technology, I mean, what we're going to do is we're going to bring information to the table that we know, and we'll create opportunities and forums for you to learn more about it. But I don't want to suggest here that we're going to be able to do a study or do a test of driverless cars. Now, what this kind of a policy effort might be able to do would be able to help. You know, we might set up a task force on driverless cars where you could come and ask questions, and we could go get information, and then you might decide, you know, is a $200,000 study on driverless cars something that you want to do? So that's the sort of thing that we're going to do. But I don't want to suggest that we're going to be able to do a pilot on driverless cars. But if that's the direction you want to go, we can help you think about how to do that.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you charge the state $200,000 to do that?
Yes.
No would be a good answer.
Mr. Munich.
You can always take the fifth, Mr. Munich.
Yeah.
I'll take
it. Okay. We have Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. Members, having sat in this committee now for the sixth term, it's taken me a while to kind of figure out the relationship between MnDOT and Humphrey and CTS and how they all come together and how they work. And a fair question especially for the newer members is, do you guys duplicate each other? Do you overlap? Or do you accentuate and complement each other? And maybe if you could give us a brief description, Mr. Munich, about how who the Humphrey Institute is and how it's different from the U of M, because if you're not on the higher ed committee, pardon me, I haven't had my morning coffee yet, Madam Chair. If you don't serve in higher ed, the lines kind of blur, and it's a little confusing as to how you tie together and how comes, like Representative Mahoney's asking, how comes you're always asking for little pots of money, and I know we've got a bill here to chat about in a minute, but if you can give us just a brief overview for the good of the committee on how you relate and how you overlap, and or maybe you don't. And then how you respond to MnDOT requests.
And Lori McGinnis can maybe talk more about, I'll just say we at the Humphrey School, we changed our name from Humphrey Institute because our primary mission is as a school, for a graduate school, we have a broad range of public policy and planning. We have a graduate program in that area. And I'm responsible for one of the centers within the Humphrey called the State and Local Policy Program. Mm-hmm. And our work is largely in the transportation policy area, and we do a variety of projects. We work very closely with the Center for Transportation Studies, and we also have faculty within the Humphrey, in addition to my program, that do work on transportation. We have also trained a number of people, graduate students who have gone into transportation, but our work is focused on public policy and in planning issues, and that's our work. And I'd like Lori to maybe say a little bit more about the center.
Ms. McGinnis,
Chair and Representative, the structure of the university, obviously university is at the highest level. CTS is an umbrella organization. As a center, we actually report to the Vice President for Research, so we have a very high reporting position within the university because we are so broad. We are one of the few university-wide centers. Because we have that designation, we interact with over 30 departments across the university. So depending on what the particular issue is, we will reach into various departments to help us address that issue. Humphrey School is one of those 30 entities that we work with. Relative to MnDOT, we have a more than 25-year history of partnership with them. We, in fact, have a very formal partnership as well as many, many ongoing interactions and relationships across the department. We are one of their primary research resources. So MnDOT also has some internal research staff, but they very frequently reach out to the university and the U of M, in fact, primarily, when they have specific research needs where we can contribute to solving that problem. We do not duplicate. We very much complement what they're doing. So they look to us when they don't have those internal resources.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Beard, did you have a follow-up?
Just a follow-up comment. For instance, like whenever this body discussed mileage-based user fees over the last two or three sessions, rather than come directly to you, we appropriated the money to MnDOT and said, scope this out, figure it out, look at all the arms and legs that could possibly be on this concept. And so then they contracted with you to basically manage the study or to run a major component of the study rather than MnDOT themselves doing it.
Exactly. And in that case, most of that was to test this new technology. But MnDOT realized as they got involved in this that they really didn't have a policy framework for thinking about it. And they said, you know, before we just start testing the technology, which is what the primary purpose of that appropriation was, we also need to have a policy framework. And so, you know, what we proposed, and the Humphrey School was funded to do this, was to set up this task force that included yourself and other legislators so that, I mean, part of the problem is that you can't really talk about the policy without sort of dealing with all the issues. And so our approach was to try to make sure that legislators and others who are both for and against mileage-based user fees could come to the table. And so that's the type of thing that we do that's a little different, I think, than, you know, sort of other aspects of engineering tests and things like that.
Thank you. Another follow-up question?
Yeah, the last one for the chairman. Chair Hornstein, I'm looking at this proposed bill for appropriations, and this is from the Highway User Trust Fund, which, of course, we're all jealous about. But it doesn't say it specifically goes to the Humphrey or CTS, but it goes to the commissioner for doing various research, and this is not the sum total of the money that Humphrey or CTS would raise during the year, is it?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this, again, I think would be for Chair Hornstein, because I think under C it does specify Humphrey School of Public Affairs as that they provide grants to them. Or does that mean that there are additional ones? I'm kind of unclear about that because it seems like it's a fairly straightforward research grant proposal, and I'm wondering why we would earmark just the Humphrey School rather than our other university systems and other programs that might also be have some value in it.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg, that's an excellent point. As I said to Representative Beard, this is an additional, this is not the entire budget of the institution. So this goes for a specific purpose that we're, you know, outlining here and that Mr. Munich relayed to the committee. But there are many other pots of money that fund the Humphrey Institute and fund the Center for Transportation Studies that, you know, are available to the university. And there's other, I mean, a whole list of other funds that public and private, I believe, that foundations that account for their budget. And now, to your question, Representative Petersburg, about why the Humphrey Institute versus someone else. Now, this is just an additional piece to an ongoing and longstanding relationship that this committee and MnDOT has. We had way back when, but it's not the only one. So, for example, Minnesota State Mankato did some very interesting research on plug-in hybrid vehicles 1 year. And I don't remember if we appropriated money or they had that already. They have a center for automotive engineering in Mankato. Who knew, right? So there are, you know, really outside of the U of M, other institutions of higher learning that do important research that I think this committee can utilize. But, you know, and I actually do believe that, because I carried that bill with Representative Broad at the time, and I think we may have done something similar with them in terms of research on plug-in hybrids. So there's certainly precedent for this, and we have utilized other institutions for very specific kinds of research before.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and that's all I would ask, is that we keep in mind that there are other institutions that could benefit from research grants as well in this area, and that we just consider them as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a little bit more context as I'm thinking through this and recalling it. I think, again, that was the situation where, you know, it was brought to our attention that there was this institution that this has this center for automotive engineering, whatever it was, and that they had an interest in this and were doing this already, and then we had a specific research need related to, you know, some public policy we were working on. And so, you know, through a series of meetings, I think we decided, hey, I think we gave them $90,000 or something. You know, so they had to buy a car, and then they outfitted it, and, you know, it was a whole deal. Maybe Representative Beard remembers that. But so, you know, but, yeah, there are, I think the bottom line is that there are other institutions here, and if they have ideas and we have ideas and they can mesh in their synergy, we'll do it.
And, Chair Hornstein, you asked a question, and so I'm just going to take something a little out of the norm and let, well, and he actually has a question too, but Representative Johnson, you asked who knew, and so I'd like Representative Johnson to answer your question.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Hornstein, yes, I do know, because I've worked at Minnesota State Mankato for 28 years, and it's a proud program and is really quite effective, and yeah. I could go on and on and explain some of the virtues of it, but I think it is a resource. I looked at that driverless car aspect, and I thought, what if that came out of Minnesota State Mankato? That would be exciting. I would also suggest that also Minnesota State Mankato has a Urban and Regional Studies Institute that I'm sure the Humphrey School is well aware of, and I believe they've worked well together with you in the past, and with I know there's currently one of my colleagues, close colleagues, is working on a grant through MnDOT, and so there are resources. I'm always interested in folks coming together, and I think taking advantage of that, the idea is to take full advantage of the multiple resources. As long as I have the mic, I would also like to ask a question, and that is that when I saw that you were on the agenda today, I was particularly interested in the ongoing long-term financing for highways. It just seems clear to me that we've got a long-term challenge. And I don't know if it's the mileage, monitoring mileage or whatever, but I wanted to extend it a little beyond that. Evidently, there's some contention with that I'm slowly learning about. I'm new on the committee. But I'm thinking, what else beyond that? What are other countries doing? What are other states doing? Is there something that I'm not even thinking of that's out there that would provide some opportunity to provide a more stable, ongoing, solid funding source to make sure that we can keep our roads going? Because it's clear we've got a challenge today, and I'm not convinced that our current funding can possibly achieve that.
Madam Chairman,
Mr. Munich,
Representative, you know, I personally think, in spite of all of the problems today with mileage-based user fees, that probably is the best long-term solution to dealing with the gas tax. And the reason I say that is because if you're going to maintain the relationship between the user and the funding for the transportation system, I mean, you know, I don't think you want to go towards general funding of transportation as a whole. There may be some pockets that you do it with, but you want to keep that user relationship. And the mileage-based user approaches may offer the best opportunities. Now, it's going to take some time. There are privacy issues that need to be dealt with. There's public attitudes towards this that need to be dealt with. But I think that if you look at the options, that may have. Now, Oregon is moving forward. Their legislature is going to starting out with a pilot that would apply to electric vehicles or vehicles with over 55 miles per gallon, which if we don't do something, they're not going to be paying anything through the gas tax system. Now, and what they're doing is they're creating a set of options for how you do it. So you can either have the high-tech telematics option, or you can have just writing a check on a regular basis. But somehow or another, and the issue is how you do the transition. So I don't know that I can give you a complete answer, but I would say keep your eye on mileage-based user fees as a, you know, if not in the in sort of the it's going to be a long-term transition, but I think that's the one thing. Now there are other approaches like value capture and other things, but those aren't going to provide a comprehensive solution for funding. And so I think Oregon's sort of on the lead on this, but Minnesota, because they've done the policy study, because there's been a pilot test, I think is not too far behind if this proves. So they can try this in Oregon. Maybe we can learn something from them, and then we'll be there. But that's at least my thought on it. But you know, I'd be glad to give you more information about and take you through everything the task force went through. But I think it's important for this group to understand those options and maybe have a context for how that fits together.
Okay, and just one moment, please, Chair Hornstein. We have four more questions on the list, and Ms. McGinnis would like to make a comment. Would it be good to wrap that up and then do those four things and then move on to our next hearing?
Well, Madam Chair, it's certainly the will of the committee. I certainly prepped our folks here to be extremely brief, but I think that beyond their brevity, it's probably fine that for us to answer any questions that members of the committee
okay,
have.
So, Ms. McGinnis, if you want to brevity, is it what?
Madam Chair, yeah. Representative Johnson, I appreciate you bringing to my attention that Mankato has a planning program now. I wasn't aware of that. I really wanted to say that we do look for collaboration opportunities with the MNSCU system. So I'm glad to have my awareness raised about that, and we will learn more.
Well, it sounds like it's good that we have you on our Transportation Committee, Representative Johnson. You're contributing a lot already. Thank you for your patience, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to whoever would like to answer. I'm going to give you a little of my history. Sorry, it's not going to be brief, but when I was on the Eagan City Council, and for those of you that don't know, Eagan is maybe 5 minutes away from the airport. We have 494 that comes through. We've got 35E that comes through. We've got 77. So virtually transportation is incredible to us. And I remember when I was on the council, I would go to meetings, and I can't remember the current name of this organization, but it's businesses that are impacted by the airport. And this is when the airport was reorganizing and all the freight companies were moving out. So right now, Eagan has a lot of logistics or freight companies that moved out. And I remember at one of the meetings, somebody said this meeting should be about Eagan. I also remember that some of the freight companies were going to be moving to Chicago rather than even staying in Minnesota. And the reason I'm saying is this, I've been hearing about regionalism is also something that was discussed in the 90s. I remember we were looking at the future of Dakota County, talking about how do you develop regional economies. That's kind of like shoes in Italy. So my question or comment is, I have been hearing these things for 20 years. And is it now that you're going to be able to tell me whether we've made any progress in 20 years? Is that something what you're doing, or is there anything new that I'm seeing here that hasn't kind of been tried already? Is that
Mr. Munich?
Well, let me say, I think a lot of things have happened in the last 20 years. There's been a huge change in the whole transportation logistics set of issues. And I'll give you an example of one. We were interviewing a manufacturing firm in greater Minnesota that's involved in shipping meat products. And they said, right now, we truck them to Seattle and put them in containers there, but why couldn't we do it from the Twin Cities? Well, there's currently weight restriction issues, that need to be dealt with that are not insignificant. So there are companies a lot has changed, and it continues to change in the whole transportation logistics issue. So what? So one of the things that we want to do with this project is to look at what are the specific issues, maybe get that to a finer grain as far as the specific clusters that are most important and what their shipping issues are. And we have a wide range of shipping issues. Some of them are lightweight, high-value products that go by airplane. There's some that bulk products that go by train. And we are, frankly, Chicago is much more competitive in the rail area, and there may be opportunities that, you know, with more intermodal investments and things like that. Now, I can't say, you know, what's the best decision, and if you're dealing with local weight restriction issues, you know, you're obviously, there's a whole set of things that need to be, but kind of getting down to the finer grain and how these relate to, how these transportation logistics questions relate to specific transportation decisions, and to be able to bring that back to the policymakers or have the policymakers involved in those discussions, because there are a lot of community issues with trucks and trains and that sort of thing, but they also are critical to the our economic competitiveness and to the base of businesses we have here. And that's what we want to do, is get to a finer grain and to help sort of have a trajectory for the future and to be sort of current as to what are the issues that these companies are facing today.
Okay, well, members, for brevity, I'm going to reinforce what Representative Hornstein said, that we would like to be as brief as possible moving through these last three questions. And Representative Howell, you're next, and then we will move to Representative Hausman and Representative Earhart, and then close our hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question was to the research topics, and it says value pricing. And my question is, you know, when you talk value pricing, a number of things pop into my head as far as, is it lanes, is it, you know, is it return on investment from concrete to asphalt? Is it what we're going to get value pricing? I guess my question is, value pricing could, it's a number of different things that pop into my head as far as value pricing. Is it, what little segment of that are we looking at?
So value pricing has also been used as sort of a broader term to include congestion pricing, which is what essentially is used on the MinPass lanes, where you charge a price based on the time and manage lanes in that way. There are other forms of value pricing, such as parking pricing. San Francisco has been doing some very innovative things with pricing. But value pricing is really how do we get more out of our system using pricing tools, which may include variable tolls. It may include parking meter pricing that's variable and things like that. So it's a little bit more specific when we're talking about value pricing. And there's been a federal program that has sort of funded a number of different things, and Minnesota has gotten some of those grants primarily for its hot lane work, but also for some of this. So that's when we use value pricing. That's sort of one of the tools that can be used.
Okay, one of the tools to keep us on task. We're going to have two more questions, and we're going to be done by 10:45. How's that? Okay, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to just follow up on Representative Johnson when he said, what else is happening out there, you know, in other states and across the country? And I wonder, when you think about research, do you build on stuff that's already been done? I'm just thinking the Texas Transportation Institute. If I'm just reading all of this, some of the very things that you're proposing to do, we're at a national conference and heard the outcome of their research, incredibly helpful, and all the states were represented. So it does seem to cross boundaries. It's not like because the research was done in Texas, it doesn't apply. So given the fact we don't have all the money in the world, and particularly on issues of research, how do we build on what other research entities across the country are doing so we don't reinvent the wheel?
Mr. Munich.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman. Part of our approach is to, first of all, tap into that other research that's already going on, each of the, in fact, we're working with the Texas Transportation Institute on a mileage-based user fee symposium because they've been doing work and we've been doing work in that area. But it's such a complex issue that no one institution, no one state is going to be able to handle. So, you know, that's part of the beauty of the way our 50-state system, everybody is sort of is doing their own innovation. And so we want to capture what's going on elsewhere in the U.S. and internationally, but to kind of bring that to the table and then find out how that applies in our particular case. So we're not going to repeat anything that's been done. We're looking at how to use good research and good efforts elsewhere, and we're connected with those other institutions. And the Center for Transportation Studies is very involved in working with those other institutions. But I haven't quite seen this issue of economic competitiveness. There is some work on economic, but not in quite the way we're talking about it, looking at clusters on the horizon yet. So we may be a bit ahead of the curve in bringing together the issue in this way.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Hornstein, would you like to wrap up?
No, thank you, members. I just really appreciate the discussion. And you know, please contact me here in the next couple of days if you have some other thoughts or ideas about this. But you know, I feel pretty confident that you know, we have a good group here at both at the Center for Transportation Studies and MnDOT and Humphrey School, that continued collaboration will help us you know, along as we look at some of these complex issues into the future.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Mr. McGinnis, Ms. McGinnis and Mr. Munich. Thank you.
Thank you.
And would somebody like to approve our minutes? You'll move them? Okay. We have Representative Clark that's going to move April 3rd minutes for approval. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Those opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Now, we will move to our next hearing as soon as we have our esteemed chair ready for it. And the topic is nothing, our favorite topic around this committee, it seems, corridors of commerce.
Yeah, and so I have a handout that says draft on it, and I was just telling, asking MnDOT if it's okay to pass it out, and they said it is. As long as I emphasize that if we end up doing a nickel gas tax in this committee, this won't pay for all these projects, but you know, we can get into that.
Okay.
And so I'm going to hand this out. Now, this is like my impression of Mr. Mitchell, my math teacher in eighth grade.
Okay.
He used to hand out the tests in the order of your grade, and so I'm still scarred from that. And I was all but last. And so you know, but he starts with like the person that always had the perfect score. So Mary Liz. he would call the name, and so Mr. Mitchell, wherever you are,
we'll save you for last.
Oh, you're supposed to be on the bottom.
Exactly. And his tone of voice is funny too. Be very Liz. And then he'd go, Frank. Scar. Anyway, okay. So it's okay for me to use this, and you know, with that caveat. So, members, this is some form of this concept we'll be discussing next week. It's still being worked on and finalized. But when I was given the opportunity to chair this committee, I thought long and hard about these different corridors that I've been hearing about for many years. And so I think Representative Hausman and Representative Holberg and Representative Beard and who have been on this committee for many years are familiar. And, of course, you've now had the freshman and Representative Mahoney, who's been having his first experience with this committee now, can recite in the sleep all these different corridors that we've heard about all session. And there's a problem with funding these corridors. They oftentimes don't meet some of the criteria that MnDOT has established and always seem to kind of push back in line. So they're not in the stiff plan. Some of them are, some of them aren't. And so I approached MnDOT and wanted to see if there was a way that we could look at some of these corridors and set up a specific program that has criteria and, you know, that's, you know, we still would have data-driven criteria, et cetera, but would really focus on commercial corridors. What are these corridors that aren't getting built but that have a real economic development and job-creating potential in our state? And if I had concluded that this just would completely throw off the MnDOT planning process or somehow create such a monkey wrench that it wouldn't be worth pursuing, I wouldn't pursue it. But I'm convinced, and I really want to thank MnDOT and their staff, because this isn't anything that they're, this isn't a MnDOT initiative, this isn't an executive branch initiative, but it's an initiative that I've consulted with many of you in this committee about, as I've learned more about your particular corridors and your particular interests. We're not earmarking money. We're simply setting up a new program. There's something similar that MnDOT has that doesn't have a lot of money in it. It's called SIMS. And whenever I think about SIMS, I think of that game that my kids were playing when they were like 10 years old, and they build a house, and, you know, so it's like roller coaster. SIMS. But and this isn't anything that a lot of folks know about. But I thought that we ought to, and it's a corridor investment program, but it's not necessarily geared towards this business-oriented, commercial, farm-to-market, factory-to-market. In Mankato, I learned about this sort of mini high-tech corridor that they have there, which is, again, I guess the theme here is learning, knowing things about Mankato I didn't know before. And that they have like a stretch of highway that, you know, it's a little like Silicon Valley or Route 128 in Massachusetts. It has like several high-tech businesses. And so we have really interesting things happening in greater Minnesota with our commercial businesses. And what they're all saying is we need these corridors of commerce enabled to grow and develop our region. So I wanted to just... you know, let you know that we're dealing with this. I think that we have some draft language that you can look at, and we have MnDOT here as a resource. But this is more of a heads up that this is sort of the culmination of a lot of thinking and a lot of meetings. You know, a couple corridors that I learned about this year, for example, you know, in addition to the typical ones on Highway 14, I didn't know about this interchange in New Ulm, you know, so that's an important one to that community that could potentially be, you know, 610, that's a standard, right? You know, we have some of the 169 projects, you know, the, of course, 371 is one that we've looked at a lot. And then, you know, we have sort of a freight, there's freight corridors too, so this Rogers to St. Michael, which I didn't know much about till this year. So that's a potential candidate. So again, I hope that, you know, the idea, the concept here, which you'll learn more about when we release this bill either tomorrow or possibly Monday now, the former chairs can relate to the technical issues that sometimes happen when we're drafting these bills. But, you know, I didn't want this to be a total surprise, and we are looking at, you know, a potential gas tax to help fund this. And, you know, that's pretty much the 30,000-foot overview here of corridors of commerce. So, I'd be happy to have any questions. And, you know, again, MnDOT's here as a resource. They're not here next to me because this is not a MnDOT or executive branch initiative, as I said. But, you know, they've certainly been a resource in helping to draft this and helping me understand a little bit more about the criteria they use. And I guess I would just simply conclude by emphasizing one other thing, which has been confusing as I've talked to people around the state about this. This is not an earmark. We don't do that. Any of these local entities that would want to get state funding for this, you know, they would have to apply and follow a set of criteria. It's a competitive grant program. So these are just examples of some of these corridors for commerce that could potentially fit into this criteria. Last thing I'll say is that I want to give some credit to Representative Beard and Senator Gimsey. Because I think they had some similar ideas, and you know, we're relying a little bit more than I am on a local match. We do expect the locals to kick in some money here as well, but you know, this is again, I think an idea that others have had, and I'm trying to build on that. So.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein, and I appreciate your leadership. It's reflective of how you've been accessible to people throughout the state and have listened to communities' concerns, and I really see that as being a true leader. And I know a lot of people in our committee here are leaders as well in our own communities, and together we can make a difference in the state.
You reminded me of one other thing when you mentioned, just one last thing,
yes,
Madam Chair. Sorry.
Yes, of course, Mr. Chair.
When we talked about talking with people, you know, one of the things that in talking with people I've realized is that, you know, taxes are a difficult issue. Anytime we raise new revenue and talk about taxes, and we are going to have, a robust discussion about this. Again, I'm spilling the beans here. We're going to have new revenue in this bill. I know no one expected that, but, you know, big announcement, we're going to have new revenue. But anytime we talk about that, it's a difficult issue. And one of the difficulties beyond the perhaps worldview perspectives that we differ in, I think, around this table. But one that I think comes up no matter what ideological or political persuasion you are, everybody wants to know, if you're going to tax me, where does it go? And I think that's always been a challenge, you know, across the board, but particularly when we're looking at a gas tax. That is something that universally has been, that concern has been expressed to me. And again, so how do we do that without, you know, when you earmark, you know where it goes. So how do you do that without earmarking? You know, that's the huge challenge. But I want to give people an example of where this may go, this particular new source of revenue for this particular new program. So I just wanted to conclude with that because I know it's a difficult thing. But I'm absolutely convinced that the needs completely astronomically outweigh the revenue. But I'll also say, in conclusion, that I think sometimes we've had these big need numbers that may be a little too big sometimes. But there is a big need number. But I think, you know, we're kind of trying to dial it back and be focused and be strategic. And that's what I'm attempting to do here. So with that, I'd be happy to take questions. I don't know if MnDOT wants to add or delete anything I said, but
thank you.
This is more of a heads up than anything else.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for keeping us in the loop and informed. I would like to call upon Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein. Thank you for bringing this idea forward and for a little credit for the discussion we've had over the last couple of years about this. I know when Senator Gimsey and I had the privilege of chairing this committee, one of the things we felt too was the constant parade of members coming by saying, can you move our project up? We really need to get something done. And as I traveled around the state, too, part of the challenge we threw back was, well, what if there is a mechanism? I mean, we're going to raise the gas tax registration fees or something, because we don't build roads for free. We don't enhance existing roads for free. We have to pay people to do that. Where is that capital going to come from? And having participated in the Bloomington Fairbridge Coalition 20-some years ago when, oh, by the way, that entire bridge was built with earmarks, I might point out.
Yes.
Back in the day before that was a bad word.
Yeah.
Now we're not doing that. And that probably, we can have the policy discussion about whether it's a good idea or not, but it's working. It gives more importance, I think, to the area transportation partnerships in each of the MnDOT districts and the system transportation improvement plan MnDOT puts forward. And you're right, bipartisanly, we have agreed over the years that we were not going to place name roads. I can only think of one time we've done that in the last decade, and that was a very painful experience. We don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
But members, this corridor concept, I think, is an idea with great merit and one that we should figure out how to make it work. If I can just offer some observations from,
yes,
having been,
please,
kicked in the shins a few times and,
yeah,
patted on the back once or twice.
Yeah.
I mostly remember the kicks in the shins,
yeah,
but where the money comes from is going to be a deal, because, you know, MnDOT's got the system worked out where the money gets divided among the districts and goes to the projects, and there is actually a matrix that is non-political and pretty much data-driven that tells you which projects move to the top of the heap. Mm-hmm. However, something like Highway 14 is very important to people down there. It may not meet the matrix of rebuilding, say, the Franklin Avenue Bridge or something like that, but it's important to those folks. Isn't there a way we could allow them to do a joint powers agreement to agree to raise some of the money themselves, either through local auction sales tax or some wheelage tax or something, and it will involve taxation, but that we allow them to do that themselves and then bring some more money to the table, and somehow that helps their project move ahead on the queue, and therein was the sticking point. I think some folks felt that by other people having the ability to do this, if they had more property tax wealth or something, they could kind of get cuts in line. And remember back in junior high how much we hated that when the bullies would do that to us? Yeah. Mostly it was the jocks. The nerds always got shoved to the back of the line.
Yeah, that's official, but really Mr. Mitchell was more my problem in junior
high. I never mind cutting in line.
And therein lies the problem right there, right, Chair Hornstein. But anyhow, it was instructional that Georgia tried something like this a few years ago, where they allowed their Georgia DOT districts to come up with plans for specific projects that were named like this somewhat, and allowed the locals to actually have a referendum on whether to raise their sales tax. And I don't remember if they got to raise it like an eighth and keep an eighth of the current tax, or it was some mechanism like that. But the vote was put to the voters. And in three of the Georgia DOT districts, they actually agreed, because there was a very clear and concise list of projects, any timeline that they would be done on. To get to your point, the voters knew exactly what they were raising the money for and exactly what they were going to get for their money, and they passed the referendums. When they were bigger and a little more amorphous, they tended to fail. But where they were clear, concise, and deadline-driven, they tended to pass. And that had great appeal to me as a chair, that we'd be able to do something like that. Now, I noticed you don't have any revenue expanding mechanisms in this particular bill, but as it moves forward, Chair Hornstein, I'd encourage you to think about giving some sort of joint powers taxation authority to people who want to rally around Highway 14, Highway 23, 169, something like that, that would enable them to have a mechanism to move their projects to the head of the line. Just some random thoughts. I just wanted to say thank you for at least broaching the subject.
Thank you. That Georgia idea is very interesting, and I'd like to talk with you more about that.
Certainly.
Thank you. And Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't, in reading through the bill, I'm not sure how this sits in the whole funding formula. Would this be like within districts, or how would you get the geographical distribution across the state?
Chair Hornstein.
You know, that's a good question. I'm going to have MnDOT take a run at that. We did discuss that, you know, I think it would be, I think, somewhat similar to what they do with this existing pot of money, the small pot of money they have with the Simsbrook, but I wanted to just have Mr. Peterson elaborate a little bit on how they would envision this.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And in response to your question, Representative Holberg, I think in our conversations with Representative Hornstein, we've looked at this as a competitive grant-type program. So a corridor advocacy group, for example, could collaborate with the MnDOT district, prepare an application for funding for a project, and there'd be several criteria against which that application would be scored. I think some of the ones that we've talked about have been, you know, safety, traffic volume, economic activity, the amount of local contribution, those kinds of things would be criteria. And so then the applications would be scored objectively against the criteria, and then we'd continue to award funding to projects till we ran out of money, basically.
So if
Representative Holbert,
I'm hearing there wouldn't be any geographical distribution component to this.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I think we discussed that there needed to be some metro outstate Minnesota split, because really the criteria would have to be different outstate than it is within the metro area, just because of the, you know, particular nature of the traffic issues in the metro area compared to greater Minnesota.
And Representative Holberg,
if I might, I'm assuming you're going to use a gas tax funding formula, which has constitutional constraints. To what elements of this program do you think would be outside of the ability to use gas tax revenue?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Representative Holberg. You know, I not intimately familiar. I know that there's a lot of planning processes that go into this. environmental review, things of that nature. I guess I'll defer to Mr. Peterson because, you know, it's not, you know, some of that is probably a little outside of the dedication, but it might not be. So I wanted to see if you could identify what specifically when we go from concept to final completion of a project, what would not be included in that dedication?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, most of the projects that we have been focused on are on the trunk highway system. So the vast majority of the costs would be eligible for payment from the trunk highway fund. As with any trunk highway improvement project, there are also local road improvements that are part of that. And so we have looked at that cost as being, you know, perhaps part of the local area contribution to the total cost of the project. And there might be other projects on the list, for example, 35W Lake Street interchange, which would probably have a transit station component. You know, that obviously some of that cost would be eligible for trunk highway funding and some of it likely not. I mean, it would depends on how it shakes out. So I think to a great extent, what we're talking about here are costs that would be eligible for trunk highway funding.
Right, and if I might, Holberg, sure. One last question. I haven't kept up. I was missing in action the last couple of years. What does 1 cent of gas tax increase raise now per year in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, my understanding, and of course we get Mr. Burris and Mr. Peterson, they can correct me, but it's about $20 million, is that correct?
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, I'd put it more at about $29 million annual per penny.
That's good to know.
All right. Thank you.
I'm very conservative, as you know, in my outlook, and so I tend to underestimate.
Madam Chair.
Okay, yes. Go ahead, Mr. Peterson.
If I may just add on briefly to what Mr. Burris said, is that $29 million, so that's what goes into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The Trunk Highway Fund gets 58.9% of that.
So there's where that I'm focused on the MnDOT piece. So
okay,
that's where I got the $20 million.
Okay, members, any other questions? Oh, we do have Mr. Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Hornstein, for this, because I think it gives us an opportunity to kind of expand the impact of what transportation is all about. For years, we've heard about the commerce growth and development up in the metropolitan area, and I think for the health of the state, we need to understand that commerce growth can also happen in greater Minnesota, and it really needs to. And so this gives an opportunity for at least some of that infrastructure being built. Sometimes it's kind of like the old story about which came first, chicken or the egg. Is the infrastructure or the commerce the one that really drives this? And I think this gives us an opportunity now to develop outstate Minnesota or that outside the metropolitan area. So I thank you for this because I think it's a step in the right way and very ingenious. Thank you.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just to that, I had the chance to do a little traveling, and this is the part that's been the most interesting to me, and maybe Representative Colbert and Representative Beard had the same experience when they traveled around because, you know, we're metro folks. And what you identified, Representative Petersburg, has been really fascinating to me just to see how much activity goes on you know, in places like Owatonna and Mankato and Wilmer, and just how united these communities are about, you know, the importance of infrastructure to their development. It's just so clear, and that they can point to, this corridor that I saw in Mankato that I had no idea existed. And so I that's been a really rewarding part of this experience for me so far, and so I hope to continue to travel and learn more.
Okay. Members, any other questions regarding this? Go ahead, Representative Hausman.
Well, Madam Chair, this is the point at which, you know, you carry over so much the emotion from another committee discussion because we're all at the final stages. But when I look at this, I mean, I think to your point, it is absolutely essential that our whole state is healthy. We all do better when we all do better. and that's why it's bewildering to me. I just came from the discussion of the Rochester bill in capital investment, where they are asking for advance authorization for infrastructure, streets and roadways and so forth. of nearly $600 million of appropriation bonds. That is debt. And that debt goes on our balance sheet. And it absolutely does affect what we can do for any other part of the state. And yet, I will tell you, the bipartisan joy in that committee saying, we should do this now. I have to tell you, sitting here in this committee and seeing this list, how does this fit? And why aren't all the parts of the state at least raising some questions about that issue? Should we put that much of our debt capacity into one city? And granted, there is a wonderful industry there. Because that's all about infrastructure, that request is all about infrastructure. I just think we have got to bring that discussion into this committee as well. When I see this and all of the testimony we've had about this, we just simply can't talk about that issue separate from this issue and the health of the whole state relative to infrastructure investment.
And can I just...
Okay, Representative
Holbert. I'm going to pile on just real quickly to that point. And also, that subregion is the healthiest economic area of the state with the lowest unemployment and some of the strongest economic indicators in the whole state as well.
Representative
Holbert. Just 2 cents.
Okay.
For what it's worth.
I was waiting for the therefore.
We'll take a nickel.
Anyone else would like to comment? Okay, we have Representative Beard.
I have an announcement for GOP caucus when you're ready for that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Would you, before you proceed, you talked about the Sims game and spilling the beans, and the best I could come up with is we can't do this, play solitaire. This is, we're all in this together. And there is domino effects if you pile it up in one community and it has effects on the rest of the community. So with that, Mr.
Well, I'm ready to play a little risk.
Okay.
Might be good. Better to do Stratego, but I think we're playing risk.
There's a brilliant mind. It took me all of the committee to figure out these games, and you came up with them in 2 seconds.
Madam Chair, okay. Before you adjourn, I just... Okay,
we do have one more committee member. I'm sorry, I did not see.
I was just going to point out one comment. You can now download RISC with Bluetooth. So long days in session, we could actually maybe cut deals through that game.
Okay.
Very Chair former Hornstein. State member played Freestyle all the time on the floor, and I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, Chair Hornstein.
Madam Chair, and members, I just wanted to again say that we're working hard with our staff and others, you know, to put this bill together, and of course there's glitches that we don't anticipate that come up, and I still have a goal of trying for tomorrow. It may be Monday. If we do it Monday, we will definitely have sufficient time. I work with everybody to make sure there's sufficient time for amendments and hearings, but at this point we're going to stay the course. No matter what happens, I think we'll still have a meeting on Monday night, but we're working really hard to dot the I's and cross the T's on this very increasingly complex bill, most of which you've already heard already. So I just wanted to thank you for your indulgence with that, and we're working as hard as we can.
Okay.
Of course, we have a deadline, so of course, deadlines do help.
Yeah. Thanks,
Chair. Thank you for that, Madam
and
Chair.
We're
going to be in very close contact with Representative Beard throughout this process, and again, if there's an opportunity, certainly be able to brief them or any others before this goes public. I'm very committed to that.
Just hang in there one more moment before we adjourn. I have an announcement. We'll do Representative Beard's announcement first.
Thank you. Madam Chair, to GOP members, if you could gather up in room 208 after the committee hearing for a few minutes, that would be a good deal. Thanks.
And then DFL caucus, we will meet now right after this in room 400 North. So thank you, members, and have a good day. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.